Chapter 13. Night Sounds. Psaltery's Lament. Fire in the Sky. Vitellius poked a stick into the fire, sending up a storm of orange motes. Beyond the circles of the platoon's campfires, the ruined storm bathed the forest in a febrile blood glow. 2,000 meters below them, Sothopolis's grid tentatively embraced the land with neat lines of street lamps. Far to the west were the powerful lights of the spaceport. A glow on the slopes below their position marked the Castellum. Much of Sotha was untrodden by human feet, and no light shone in the endless wilderness beyond the mountain. The sea was dark with mystery. For Mericus, raised on a planet whose skies glowed with wasted light, the darkness was incredible and unnerving. Sotha did its best to make them feel as if humanity was there on sufferance. Insects sang their songs loudly and relentlessly. The calls of nocturnal avians whooped out of the deeper forest, and every so often the crackling of larger animals made the men look to the gloom. Fantines had been extirpated from the mountain, but they came in frequently from the deeper forests, seeking to re-establish their old territories. Life made a constant din throughout the night, and it was the trees themselves that were the most vocal. At night, the plants did their growing. Quick tree wood cracked as it swelled. Creep vine leaves rustled upward, impatient for tomorrow's dawn.
"I don't like the tree talk," said Governisk.
The sergeant shared a fire with a lieutenant, giving the men a rest from their presence. Half a dozen campfires dotted a clearing around a cave mouth upon a gently tilted slab of rock. The bare stone was free of Sotha's vigorous flora. Chatter and laughter rose over the fires with the wood smoke.
"I never thought to see trees grow," said Mericus. "I mean, actually, grow, right before your eyes."
"It's not like this on your world."
"Where I was born, there were plenty of trees, but they grew slowly. Although," he added, "I can't speak for anywhere else."
"What about you, Captain?"
"Me? The same as Mericus. Back on my world, trees grow slowly."
"Mericus is wrong anyway," said Bellarion.
"How so?" "You can't see them. It's dark," said Bellarion.
"Pedant. You can certainly hear them."
Bellarion grinned. He passed Mericus a flask, which he took appreciatively. Mericus enjoyed his stints as soldier, the comradeship, the patrols deep into the wilds. Not that he was going to own up to it. If he looked too keen, he'd be shipped off-world to fight in a proper war. As far as his limited plans for life went, that particular item was not on the list. The fire snapped and popped, the death of trees singing out to the living boughs. Gavenisk hunkered down lower.
"I'll be glad to get home," he said. "The mountain, shaking like that. I don't like it. No good will come of it. They could have at least warned us."
Bellarion slapped him on the back.
"Gov, you're a misery and no mistake. Always grumbling about something."
"I'm a realist," said Gavenisk. "The galaxy's finished. You're the fools, laughing it up like there's nothing wrong with the sky."
"Drink some of this, then we'll see how realistic you are."
Gavenisk scowled, but took the flask anyway. A group of men detached themselves from the camp, and an expectant hush fell. The noises of the forest pressed in harder. A few moments later, the faint notes of a psaltery groaned out from the hollow in the side of the mountain.
"Damn it! The men know they're not supposed to be in there," said Vitellius. "Leave them be, Vit," said Mericus. "That cave is a dead end. It doesn't go anywhere. The music is good for morale. It's all we've got here on the mountain. No Picts, no writing, nothing recorded as per Lord Gilliman's orders. Don't stop the music. They're not doing any harm."
"You can't know that," said Vitellius.
"I can't know," said Mericus, "but I can feel it. You ever notice that?"
He looked to the other two sergeants.
"The way things feel up here. Calm on a good day, tense before a storm, threatening when there's a Fantine about."
The other two nodded.
"Yeah," said Bellarion. "It's the mountain."
"So, if it was bad, we'd know about it," said Mericus to Vitellius. Vitellius looked over at the glossy cave opening. The treated stone sucked in most of the light, but mineral crystals winked here and there, invitingly in the grey rock around it. Outside, white quicktree trunks stuck up like the peg teeth of a quarian. Judging by the height of the new growth, the cleaning teams had been there 6 months ago. The saplings between the stumps were already twice the height of the men.
I suppose it doesn't matter too much, said Vitellius after a while.
Mericus smiled broadly.
There you are.
Remember when you first came here, Vitellius? What a stickler you were.
Vitellius poked at the fire.
A typical McCrag man.
All rules, said Bellarion.
Now look at you. You're almost relaxed.
The other sergeants laughed.
The mountain affects us all, said Vitellius.
Except Gavenisk, said Mericus.
Vitellius smiled.
I shouldn't put up with this. But isn't life so much more fun now that you do, said Mericus. It's called having friends. Although, I suppose you must have friends on McCrag. Time with them is probably timetabled in.
He took papers and dried leaf out from one of his pouches. There were a number of plants on Sotha that made for pleasant smoking. He rolled himself a stick and offered the leaf around.
Filthy habit, said Vitellius.
Mericus took a burning twig from the fire and lit his smoke.
Life's too short to live purely. Aren't you the living proof of that?
Chuckled Bellarion.
True, true. I wonder often how by terror I got sent out here. The lords of McCrag don't do anything without good reason, Mericus, said Vitellius. If you're here, it will be for some purpose. A scribe somewhere will have looked down a chart on his parchment and said, what Sotha really needs is a self-satisfied braggart that should achieve optimum social cohesion, and off you go.
All of them laughed at that.
See, said Mericus, even you see it's ridiculous. Not really. There will be a reason you're here, Mericus, a good one. You're a number in an algorithm. It mightn't make sense to you, but Rebute Gilliman does not like to leave anything to chance.
They fell quiet a while. Mericus stood up and threw his finished smoke into the fire.
Well, gentlemen, I need to see to a little business. Then I think it may be time to turn in. I'm looking forward to finding a nice hard root not to sleep on.
He went to the edge of the rock slab. The stone pavement stretched on for 40 meters before a sharp angle turned it into a cliff. From the top, he got a little privacy and a stunning view of Mount Faris's foothills marching down to the plain. He remained there for some moments, listening to the melancholy wail of Sothern music echoing from the mountain. The strange finish to the stone of the cave dulled and amplified the music simultaneously, taking away the sharp edges and adding an indefinable eeriness to it. The tune was sad, as most Sothern airs were, and fitting to the storm-tinted vista. The tiny square of the orbital gleamed directly overhead, a steady light in the red of the night sky. Beside the orbital, a single star shone, so brightly its rays danced on the swell of the distant sea. That was McCrag, lit up by the strange machinery of the mountain. Looking at it made the roil of the storm less fearful somehow. Mericus turned back to the fires, thinking already of his sleeping roll, but then something caught his eye that put all thought of rest from his mind. There were lights in the sky. He frowned. There had been no stars beyond the systems of Ultramar in the skies over Sotha for nearly 2 years, only the pale, ruddy rage of the ruin storm. And these stars were moving. He hurried back to his fellow officers. The lights weren't visible from the campsite, but he crouched and spoke quietly, careful not to alarm the men.
Give me your field glasses, he said to Vitellius.
Sure. Why?
I think we've got a problem.
What's got into you? Said Bellarion. See a big spider?
Mericus gave him a look that killed the smile dead on Bellarion's face.
Vitellius, are there any fleet movements due?
Vitellius shrugged.
Not that I'm aware.
Supply fleet, or legion.
They tell you if there were a lot coming in, surely.
No one's mentioned anything, frowned Vitellius.
Mericus spoke urgently. The others had picked up on his worry and listened closely.
You better look at this, all three of you.
There are ships,
said Gavenisk.
Keep your voice down.
There are ships coming and going all the time, said Bellarion.
Yes, said Merikus, but not this many.
He led his comrades from their fire, where they slapped their arms at the cold of the mountain night. Their complaints ceased when he pointed upward. Against the rubicund light of the storm, an ordered constellation moved purposefully towards the orbital.
There must be dozens of them, said Gavenisk.
They're coming in outside of the normal approach, said Merikus. He pointed. Look, they're coming at the station obliquely. That's not a normal anchoring vector.
You can't be sure, said Bellarion,
but his protest was a token one. The size of the fleet troubled them all.
Doesn't it strike you as odd? Said Merikus.
Damn it, said Vitellius. Men, get those fires out, he shouted. Platoon, to arms!
The music stopped. Men grumbled about the pointlessness of drills and over-eager off-world officers, but stamped out the fires, grabbed up their gear, and dived into cover. The last embers burned out, and the darkness flooded out of the woods. The light of the ruin storm lit upon the clearing, turning the leaves around it a glossy red-black. It reminded Merikus of blood in moonlight. Foreboding gripped him. Questions came from the dark woods.
Lights in the sky! Fleet approaching! Said Vitellius. Shut up!
The lights sailed at low orbit in ghostly silence. The lesser craft were bright globes of albedo shine, catching rays from the hidden sun. The capital ships were small, indistinct shapes marked by their running lights.
They're going too fast to take up anchor. That's intercept speed, said Gavenisk.
A wailing went up from Sothopolis.
The sirens,
said Vitellius. The ships passed overhead. Their shapes became firmer, silhouettes against the storm. They sailed over the peak of the mountain.
It's an exercise, surely, said Bellarion.
Try the vox,
Vitellius hissed. His vox-bearer knelt to the task. The sharp click of dials snapped through the clearing.
It's dead, sir, he reported. I'm getting nothing. Hang on, here's...
A sudden shriek leapt out of the apparatus.
Screaming,
said Gavenisk.
His face betrayed his shock.
They are screams!
Merikus gave Vitellius a questioning look as sounds of agony echoed around the campsite.
Shut it off,
ordered the lieutenant, catching Merikus's meaning. The noise cut out. Flashes of false lightning burst across the heavens as the Legion orbital opened fire. Bright points of missiles, the short-lived lines of Laz, all eerily silent in the void overhead.
That's not an exercise, Merikus murmured. This sounds like what happened on Kalth. It's an attack.
The ship slowed, spread out. The roiling explosions of detonating warheads and annihilated matter preceded shield flares so bright that hard shadows leapt from the forest. Beads of light shot from the invading force towards the station.
Why aren't they returning fire back at the platform? Asked Bellarion. A fleet that size could smash it out of the sky.
Boarding craft, said Merikus. They mean to take it. Who are they? Said Gavenisk.
That's not something we need to worry about.
So what do we do?
Gavenis asked. The men were watching in hushed silence. Pinpoint lights were closing on the orbital from the west.
That's the real question, isn't it? Said Merikus.
We must move lower down the mountain, said Vitellius decisively. Sothopolis will be evacuated. We must be there for the population.
And our families, added Bellarion.
Merikus nodded.
Best not do anything hasty.
10 minutes later, a silent column of men filed out into the forests on the mountain, while the thunder of treachery tore apart the skies of their world and sirens wailed up from the city. After little over a century of mankind's stewardship, war had come to Sotha.